The scandal surrounding New York Governor Eliot Spitzer centers on a high-priced prostitution ring called the Emperor's Club VIP. Governor Spitzer was reportedly caught on a federal wiretap arranging to meet a prostitute and discussing payment. Prosecutors say that the Emperor's Club catered to clients in major cities around the world who could pay between $1,000 and $5,500 an hour. This is a world that most of us are not familiar with. I will admit that I did take a look at the website when this news broke and was baffled by the rating systems and how much these women charged per hour. But if the stories in today's newspapers are any indication, all of us are fascinated by vice, drinking, smoking, gambling, pornography, and even prostitution. So rather than take this from the angle of Governor Eliot Spitzer, let's talk about the other side, the vice. Let's talk about prostitution. What is it that makes it so fascinating? And how is this playing out in this story? We turn to Peter Sagal, host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. But more importantly than that, he's the author of a book called The Book of Vice, Very Naughty Things and How to Do Them. Peter Sagal joins us from the studios of Chicago Public Radio. Hello, Peter. Good to have you with us.
Hello, Robert. Great to be with you.
I don't know if you exactly want to be called an expert in this area, but you're the best we got.
I know. I was on the bench, so I'm coming into play. I have to say, though, but as you do, I work for a public radio salary, so I myself have never played in the realms of the Emperor's Club myself, so it's fairly new to me, that particular thing.
You visited strip clubs in your book and swingers clubs, but I guess you just didn't get the kind of advance needed to take
no,
it to the
I
really high-end vice.
Know, or the permission from my wife. In fact, I don't write about prostitution in the book, I should say, mainly because problems of research, all kinds of ethical and other logistical problems.
You but don't I break the law in the book, we should
no,
say.
No, no. No laws were broken. No morals were harmed in the making of this book. However, I do write a fair bit about sex scandals and the nature of these things that everybody seems to see that are happening all the time. In fact, today the New York Times, for example, wrote a story about all the people in recent months caught in sex scandals or recent years. You know, Bill Clinton, of course, Gary Hart, James McGreevy, Mark Foley. What people need to understand, though, is those aren't the people who misbehaved sexually while holding high office. Those are the people who were caught. That I think the historical record shows that these people – powerful, important people, almost entirely men, but that has more to do with the fact that who holds these offices, not the nature of men, have been behaving badly this way for centuries. And it's only the occasional one that gets caught. In fact, I'm willing to bet that what's so odd and in a weird way tragic about the Eliot Spitzer case is that he is probably not a typical, you know, indulge his every appetite womanizing pole in the way that, say, most I think, iconically, John F. Kennedy was. John F. Kennedy was a horn dog of extraordinary proportion, and it's amazing that he was never outed for this during his time in office. It seems like Eliot Spitzer was a straight and narrow guy, a straight arrow, if I can mix the two metaphors, pretty much until recently. And that raises the interesting question of what just happened. Why did he finally, if you will, give in.
Exactly right. I want to make sure we get our listeners into this conversation. If you have questions about vice in general, we want to hear from you. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can also comment on our blog. It's npr.org/blogofthenation. So is there a connection, Peter, do you think, between power and sex scandals?
I think absolutely there is. And I think that there's a certain – I mean, it goes back in history that powerful people get to break sexual rules. As I mentioned in my book, the pharaoh of Egypt, ancient Egypt, got to marry his sister. And depending on your sister or your brother, that may not be something you want to do. But the point is he got to do it and you can't. And that has always – I mean, there are so many stories. King Henry IV, one of the Edwards in the early part of the last century – Prince Edward at the time used to have young ladies placed around his estate, you know, so that he could go hunt them. It added a certain spice to his adultery. It has always been the case that powerful people politically and financially have always been immune from the sexual rules that bind down the poor rest of us. And my theory about Eliot Spitzer, and I don't know the man, I have certain things in common with him. We're both Harvard educated, grew up in the New York area, nice people who supposedly play by the rules. He chose to prosecute as the district attorney some of the most powerful and wealthiest men in New York City and therefore the world. And one thing I can tell you about the way these men live, these multi-billionaires, these hedge fund managers, these Goldman Sachs, Richard Grasso, I think was his name, the head of the New York Stock Exchange, that kind of men, they live in a world in which there are no rules, in which they get to do whatever they want. And I'm not saying anything specific about any of them, but their world is one in which their lovely wives stay at home while they, the men, go out and enjoy themselves with the mistresses or these resorts in the Dominican Republic that provide all the women you need, and nothing bad ever happens to them. And I can only imagine that that might have contributed to some of the rage that Eliot Spitzer, as one of your prior guests said, exhibited toward these people. How dare you break these rules that I myself am so bound by? I representing rectitude and right and what is good. And what happens to you, of course, is eventually I think you get curious. And eventually I think you begin to wonder, when do you rise to that level where you're no longer bound by those rules? As your prior guest also said, where there is no governor. And I think, you know what, this is a bet. This is an absolute supposition. People are wondering how Spitzer found out about the VIP Emperor's Club. I bet he found it out from one of his targets. I bet it showed up in one of his investigations into the lifestyles of some of these Wall Street titans he was prosecuting. And I bet he kept that memo. And I bet he kept that contact number. And I bet he kept wondering what it would be like to live that way just a little.
You had to bring gambling into it, didn't you, Peter
I
Sagal?
I did. That's another thing. One of the things I write about. Another place where people really take a lot of risks they shouldn't.
Well, there's something I noticed when I was reading these documents yesterday, as I'm sure many people have. And that's that maybe you found this when you've looked into these worlds. There's not a lot of shame involved. Once you've crossed a certain level doing something that perhaps you should not do, it's like a business transaction. Listening to this, it's like Eliot Spitzer's dealing with his bank. It's
absolutely.
All money transfers. It's all logistics. There's no sense of illicit nature of it.
One of the principles of this kind of behavior is the conviction that you're always right in your personal dealings will trump the evidence of what you're actually doing. So one of the other things I've been thinking about all day since this news broke is what he told himself. What did he tell himself? Again, this avatar of right and wrong, the man who's going to clean up New York, if you see some of his ads, one of his ads, he says, "I just think you should do what's right, period," he says. Oh, yeah? How did he justify this? And my guess is that he said something along the lines to himself of, well, you know, I'm in the world doing good, fighting for the people, fighting for law, fighting for what's right. This helps me. This gets me through my day. Therefore, since it helps me, a force for good, do good, it is good. Now, that, I think, of course, is a rationalization. Pache, Mr. Dershowitz, who was on the show a little earlier, it is breaking the law, and it is against the law, and I think he's in deep trouble. But you would be amazed and surprised, or maybe not, since we all do it, the way that people can justify almost anything to themselves.
Let's try and get our listeners into this conversation. Justin is on the line. Justin calls us from Norfolk, Virginia.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me on the show. I have a question for your guest. One of the things that bothers me is the prostitution is glorified in the media. I mean, you've got the classic case of the pretty woman, the prostitute with the heart of gold, and then, for us to make it illegal seems hypocritical. What's your take on that?
Well, I have my own feelings about prostitution being illegal. I personally, and this is my own opinion, think that it should be much like, I think it should be legalized. I think that there are horrible abuses in prostitution, sex slavery, all kinds of things. But those are the same as the kind of abuses that went on in, say, mass industrial manufacturing at the end of the 19th and early 20th century. Nobody said, let's do away with manufacturing. People said, let's regulate it so that capitalism can work, so that people can get paid what they absolutely deserve to do this work. But yes, you're right. Prostitution is glorified. There is that, and I don't know if I can say this, so I won't, the cliche of the prostitute with a heart of gold. And I think that for men in particular, and I write about this in my book, particularly in regards to strippers, where I think it applies, men dream of dealing with a woman who they don't have to impress, who they don't have to be a good guy towards, who they don't have to obey the rules that have been imposed on them they feel towards. And what's weird is that they dream of a woman they don't have to perform for, because by virtue of their paying them, and yet then they dream of that woman somehow responding to them with kindness and affection, who can learn their true self. And I think that's the dream behind, the whole pretty woman fantasy.
Thanks for your phone call, Justin. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. So you were saying about this world, especially with the particular prostitute involved in this case reading these documents.
Kristen.
Kristen, I should have had her name on my fingertips. But Kristen says, you know, he's a nice guy, talks about the governor, and talks at length in these documents about how this is her job. She's comfortable with what she does. She's comfortable with what she tells her clients, and she's very frank with them. I thought that was a remarkable insight. A little insight into this world.
I love that, and I love the fact that I think her quote was, "I'm not, you know, a moron. I mean, I know what I'm here for." And I think one of the things that's so great about that is, again, you were talking earlier in the show about these ads for escorts. There's a whole level of euphemism about this whole industry: companions, models, scintillating company. You know, the website, which you can see in Google Cache for Emperor's Club, is filled with that stuff. The women, know what it's about. I think there are a lot of women, actually, who are in this business who are blogging about it, and you can read what purport to be, and I believe to be, honest accounts. They're very matter-of-fact. They know exactly what men want. They know exactly what they're being paid for. And they are, I hope, that they are honest in saying, happy or at least resigned and comfortable providing it for a due fee.
Let's talk with Roger. Roger joins us from Delray Beach, Florida.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, there's one thing that's very bizarre about this whole situation that nobody has touched upon since the story broke. If you ran a prostitution ring and you were dealing with Elliot Spitzer, and, I mean, wouldn't you think you were getting set up?
Yeah, I'm not sure I know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying? There's something really bizarre that they would send a prostitute to Elliot Spitzer.
Well, I wasn't entirely clear if they knew who the client was, although apparently some had suspected this. I think what he's asking is, you know, it's like seeing, I don't know, the Attorney General coming to you. You start to look around and say, where are the cameras?
Where are the wiretaps?
Where are the wiretaps? Hey, we've all seen The Wire. We know how this works.
According to a report in Newsday today, the records indicate that Mr. Spitzer made use of the service 8 or 9 times. Once you get to that point, I think if you're the madam, if I can use the old term, if you're running the call girl service, you pretty much know that whatever trouble you're in, he's in too. I also think that if you're used to dealing with law enforcement, you don't expect the governor himself to show up to run. You know, can you imagine that meeting where the governor's having his legal anti-prostitution task force and he says, guys, I think the guy posing as the John should be me. That's a duty I'm willing to take on myself. So put a wire in my body and no, I don't think so. I think when they got the call from the governor, they thought it was the governor.
Collecting evidence, you know.
It could have been. You know, maybe that's a defense for him. You know, I was just I can't let my law enforcement instincts go, says Governor Spitzer. I was out there investigating them, and I was just about to bust them when all of a sudden the news broke.
You know, after what he did on Wall Street, some people wouldn't doubt the fact that he might personally go in and put the cuffs on people. Roger, thanks for calling. Peter, you know, from some of your theories here...
And I should say, they're all theories.
I was going to say, you know absolutely nothing about the world of prostitution.
Speculating.
But you do know a little bit something about vices. Is all this talk about vice and all this talk about Elliot Spitzer, is this a cautionary tale that men will look at and think twice about before visiting a prostitute? Or, and I think you may lean toward the second thing, are they going to look at this website, read this whole story and say, well, you know, maybe if I save up a little bit?
Well, the funny thing is that seems to happen, that latter phenomena seems to happen quite a lot. For example, in the book, I visited a swingers club. This is one of these, you know, wife swapping, if I can use the antiquated term they don't like. And while there, I met a pair of high school teachers. And the high school teachers told me that they were there because they had read a news story about another pair of high school teachers in another state who had been busted and fired from their jobs for attending a party exactly like that one. And the couple I was talking to, their reaction was not, oh, my God, we must stay away from this for fear of our lives. No, they were like, that sounds fun. So, yes, my guess is, strangely, I think inquiries into prostitution websites and call girl services and escort services will, in fact, go up because of this.
There you go. Peter Sagal, host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is the author of the book of Vice, Very Naughty Things and How to Do Them. He joined us from the studios of Chicago Public Radio. You can read about Peter's visits to a swingers club, sorry about this, and other adventures he had while researching for his book of Vice at our website, npr.org/talk. Research indeed. Thanks, Peter, and we are sorry for making you the expert on prostitutes.
You know, anything, you know, hey, if that's the gig. Robert, my pleasure.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Robert Smith in Washington.